You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this episode of The Vitals, we spoke with Caitlin Benda, a clinical oncology nutritionist supervisor at American Oncology Network, about dietary strategies to support patients undergoing curative cancer therapies. Throughout our talk, Benda discusses how nurses can help change a patient's approach to diet in order to combat complications brought about by treatment. In addition, she highlights the importance of allowing patients some autonomy in their diet, common diet-related side effects with different cancer treatments, and the importance of nutrition screening tools in increasing necessary referrals.
My name is Caitlin Benda. I'm a registered dietitian and a board-certified specialist in oncology nutrition, and I'm currently the oncology nutrition supervisor for American Oncology Network. I've been an oncology dietitian for about 6 years. I've been a dietitian overall for about 13 years this year, but I've spent the majority of that time working with oncology patients, either in the outpatient setting or in the inpatient setting. Most of the 6 years has been spent outpatient, whether that's been in medical oncology, radiation oncology, surgical oncology, or all of the above.
And so just to start off with a broad question, what are some important diet considerations for patients who are undergoing curative cancer therapies?
So I would say that the most important diet consideration is really what is individualized to work best for that patient. So when a patient's going through treatment, a lot of their nutritional goals and priorities really becomes dependent on how they are doing. So if they're having challenges prior to starting on treatment from a nutritional standpoint, or if they exhibit nutritional deficits prior to starting on treatment, then we have a much different set of priorities than if they are presenting to the start of treatment or on treatment and really not experiencing any or many significant nutrition deficits. So ultimately, what we are looking for and what we're really trying to support is that maintenance of a patient's weight, and most importantly, in maintenance of their lean body mass. So what that really translates to is looking at adequate calorie and protein intake to ensure that their body has the energy and has the building blocks of protein, the amino acids that are needed to help with supporting their overall weight and their overall lean body mass. If a patient is not experiencing nutritional deficits, then we also can look at the nutrient density, or kind of the diet quality overall, where we are not only looking at adequate calorie and protein intake, but also looking at what kind of nutritional factors are making up those calories and protein. So are we able to include some plant-based proteins to get in some fiber, to get in some other nutrients? Can we start looking at fruits and vegetables and variety of fruits and vegetables to start pulling in pieces of that plant-based diet? Or are we solely just looking at calories and protein? So it really just depends on how a patient is feeling, what side effects they're having, and how they're doing with maintaining their weight as they go through treatment.
Are there any specific things that you notice a lot that have to be addressed more than others? For instance, I'm assuming that weight loss is a common problem and trying to keep that caloric intake consistent. Are there any other things that you highlight that you see a lot in your practice?
I'd say the loss of appetite is one of the primary ones that we're seeing. And where it comes into play is whether that loss of appetite is occurring because of other nutrition impact symptoms or other side effects of the disease or side effects of the treatments that are therefore impacting a patient's ability to eat or drink to a significant degree. If a patient's presenting with nutrition impact symptoms, one of the things that we do is look to manage those symptoms from diet, reinforcing management with medication as well to help with preventing those from having a significant impact on their appetite and their ability to fuel themselves and nourish themselves adequately. Things like nausea, diarrhea, constipation, mouth sores, taste changes are a big one, fatigue, pain. So not all of them are directly nutrition related, but a lot of them have the ability to impact what a patient is eating or drinking. So that first first kind of approach is to ensure that those symptoms are being managed to a degree where the patient is able to eat or drink. Loss of appetite is a big one, just in general, because it can be a side effect of medication, side effect of the disease, and really trying to find ways to encourage a patient to eat without relying on their appetite to be that trigger or that stimulus to encourage them to eat food. So they both play a significant role, and the management really becomes very similar in terms of a lot of times small frequent meals, small frequent scheduled meals throughout the day, not relying on hunger cues, again, to be that trigger, using external cues, things like smartphones, timers, external cues like post-it notes, kind of depending on a patient's degree of familiarity with technology, but finding ways to incorporate methodology and strategies that really don't rely on their own internal cues as the impetus for them to eat.
It's very interesting and really good strategies that you mentioned there. And so once again, sort of broadly speaking, but do diet recommendations change based on the different types of therapies patients are undergoing, for instance, chemotherapy versus immunotherapy versus radiation therapy?
So generally speaking, the diet goals don't change. The therapies tend to change most either based on like unique side effects of certain medications, like we know oxaliplatin with cold sensitivity, or certain ones like pemigatinib, where you see high phosphorus, or Piqray, where you can see hyperglycemia. So looking at certain side effects that are unique to particular medications really helps to guide where those diet changes may be included in the patient's as a part of a patient's treatment plan. Otherwise, a lot of it is really driven by side effects. So if somebody's getting radiation to, you know, their mediastinum and they're having a lot of esophagitis, that's going to kind of guide the direction of the dietary changes versus just that diagnosis or just the treatment in and of itself. So it really becomes very broad initially, and then we start kind of fine-tuning diet recommendations based on the symptoms that that patient is experiencing or based on the side effects that come alongside the different treatment that they're on.
And could you give some examples of some treatment-related side effects or adverse events that you do commonly see and how you might have to adjust the diet plan to take those into consideration?
Sure. So one of the biggest ones is a lot of people come into treatment thinking, I'm going to eat healthy, and they're starting to include all these fruits and vegetables and really great nutrient-dense foods, but really don't oftentimes meet that goal of calories and protein as that kind of initial defense against weight loss and maintenance of nutritional status. So if somebody's experiencing nausea, if somebody's experiencing diarrhea, one of the first things that we're typically doing is pulling back on those high-fiber foods because we know that the fiber promotes earlier satiety. So if they have loss of appetite, fiber is sometimes also not their friend in that sense because it's going to make them feel full more quickly. But also if food is taking longer to move from the stomach into the small intestine and someone's having nausea, fiber is not usually going to be something that is going to help with that. Or if they're having diarrhea and they're having a lot of, you know, loose, watery, very frequent stools, fiber is going to make their body create more stool, which is going to make the diarrhea worse. So that's one example for a lot of GI side effects that we may modify the fiber intake of the diet and take them from what we would consider to be a very healthy, well-balanced, kind of plant-forward or plant-focused diet to something that really flips to the other side of the coin and pulls away all sources of fiber and really focuses on those like white breads, white rice, white pasta, things that don't have a lot of nutritional quality from a vitamin and mineral standpoint, but really are going to be what's best to help them with managing or not exacerbating those side effects. Constipation is a hard one because a lot of times with constipation, people think, well, we should just increase fiber intake. But again, depending on a patient's other symptoms that they're having, fiber is not always the answer to help with managing constipation. It can be, but constipation arises for many reasons, whether it is medication related, whether it is just inadequate intake of food and fluid, lack of physical activity and movement. So it takes really looking at what is the root cause of that constipation and can we treat it by having a patient hydrate better? Can we influence it by encouraging a patient to be eating the same small frequent meals, by getting a patient moving more, by using kind of alternative treatments or things like, you know, warm prune juice or warm apple juice to kind of get their bowels moving more quickly. So constipation, I think, is one of the ones that requires more of an in-depth look at really what is the root cause of the constipation as we look at like dietary management of that constipation.
And so how can specifically nurses and also caregivers really help the people they're caring for be conscious of their nutritional needs and making sure that they're optimizing what they're putting in order to get the best outcomes out of their treatment?
I think one of the best things that nurses can do and caregivers is reinforce to patients that nutrition is an important part of their treatment plan. A lot of times people will come in and say, oh, well, I knew I was going to lose weight, or maybe they had excess weight to lose initially up front. And so they look at the weight that they're losing as a good thing. And so really reinforcing that the goal from a nutritional standpoint as they're going through treatment is really maintenance of that weight. Obviously easier said than done if somebody has a lot of barriers to eating. So really finding ways to support the patient kind of on the nutrition leg of their cancer journey. So really providing a positive environment around eating, using different behavior change strategies, like reframing the purpose of eating, really not using appetite as that driver for eating, but thinking of the importance of nutrition as really being like a medication, that we don't develop a hunger to take our medications. We take our medications because we know we need them to keep our bodies healthy. And so looking at calories and protein in the same sense as somebody's going through treatment, looking at it as a medication, not that food is medicine, but more of that you're eating not because you have the desire to eat, but because you're eating because you know your body needs those nutrients to help with fueling it and keeping it healthy, to keep you feeling well on treatment, to help with minimizing treatment side effects, and ultimately keeping you on treatment so you can have those desirable treatment outcomes. Finding ways to set a patient up for success is huge. Using things like individual portions or small portion sizes that are prepackaged or convenience foods, so that it's not adding a barrier in of preparation, but making things easy to grab, easy to find, whether that is sitting a bowl of trail mix next to a patient as they are watching TV so that they can kind of munch as they're doing something else, incorporating that mindless eating into it can be really helpful in just encouraging that overall intake and kind of chipping away at those overall nutritional goals. Also really just kind of having that positive mindset around eating. A lot of times when caregivers are looking at their loved one that's going through cancer treatments and they're seeing that they're eating less, the thought, we show a lot of love through food a lot of times, you know, and so they want to give the patient the full plate of food that maybe the patient would have eaten 6 months ago. And that can turn somebody off to eating up front just by seeing that large plate of food. Their brain kind of works against them and says, I know I'm not going to be able to eat this, so I'm not even going to try. So really involving the patient in their care in that instance, providing the patient, if the patient is mobile and able to be up, having them serve themselves, put on the plate what they can eat so that even if it's a quarter cup of food, that when they've finished that quarter cup of food or done as well as they can for that quarter cup of food, that they feel good about it versus looking at a, you know, maybe two cups of food serving and that they've only eaten a quarter cup, that now they're looking at what they didn't do versus what they did do. So really having that positive celebration over how hard they're trying and what they're doing and encouraging that frequently throughout the day. So oftentimes, you know, trying to encourage intake every hour, every 2 hours, if intake and portion sizes are really compromised, and helping a patient to really develop what is doable for them, whether it's a certain food, a certain taste that's working, removing restrictions or barriers from the diet, unless they're absolutely necessary, to really just encourage being liberal with overall intake and getting in what they can. Over the course of the day and little by little, setting goals that are achievable. If a patient's eating one meal a day and the goal is for them to eat six small meals a day, not expecting that if they don't go from one to six that they're failing, but if they go from one to two, celebrating that incremental increase and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you. I noticed you mentioned really trying to remove those barriers to diet. Do you come into contact with patients who want to try and adhere to a vegetarian diet or any of those other more popular, less mainstream diets? And how do you navigate that?
So I, a lot of times, it's very accurate that a lot of people will come in and having changed their diet drastically after a diagnosis. And sometimes if they're not having challenges with eating and drinking, we can kind of roll with that because it falls in line very much with what we recommend for survivorship or cancer prevention or reducing risk of recurrence from the American Institute for Cancer Research. Really falls oftentimes in line with what we see as a very cancer protective diet, looking at a plant forward diet, focusing most of the meals on plants, including animal protein more as like a side item rather as the star of the show for the meal. So a lot of times they're positive diet changes, but where they start to backfire is if somebody is either feeling overly restricted from their diet and they are losing weight because of this desire to stick to these dietary restrictions, that don't necessarily have, they support overall nutritional status, but it doesn't, we talk a lot about that diet doesn't cure cancer. You know, based on current research, there is nothing in the diet that cures cancer, just as there's nothing in the diet that has a direct causation relationship with a cancer diagnosis. And so there's certainly correlational relationships that exist, but I talk a lot about really defining what we know about diet, nutrition, physical activity, and how it relates to the development of cancer and how it influences cancer treatment. So when I talk to patients and they have these diets that they wish to adhere to, I try to meet them where they're at and work with them to find out kind of why did they change their diet? Is this a sustainable change for them? Do they have the resources, whether that is support, whether that is financial, to sustain whatever diet change that they're making? Is it rooted in science? You know, is somebody coming in saying that they want to do a ketogenic diet and really we aren't seeing the benefits from a research perspective of that certain diet as it relates to either their treatment? And a lot of it really falls into looking at, again, what is sustainable for them. So if it's, they feel very strongly about doing this and it's not harming them, either financially, restriction with intake, or, you know, kind of feeling deprived or feeling like they are assigning morality to certain foods as being good or certain foods as being bad, then I try to work within their preferences overall, just as I would if somebody was vegetarian or vegan for the last 20 years, I wouldn't try to convince them to change their diet because this is their chosen intake. And ultimately, they're the one that gets to decide how they want to fuel their bodies. And so I try to really work within their restrictions. And if they are overly restricting, try to reason with them or tell them up front that there may be a point in time that based on either side effects or based on changes in weight or based on just restrictions to their overall intake that we may need to discuss liberalizing this. And sometimes that point comes, and oftentimes at that point they have already liberalized their diet because they realize that it's not sustainable. Or maybe they tolerate treatment well and they're able to sustain that diet change up front. But there is a lot of myth busting that I feel comes into our jobs about really what is evidence-based and rooted in science from a nutritional perspective versus what is more misinformation that, you know, unfortunately is very widespread and very easy to access as it relates to cancer and nutrition.
All right. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you today that you would like to highlight or discuss?
I think that the last thing would just be that the nurse and dietitian relationship is such an important collaboration. So oftentimes, you know, the nurses, especially infusion nurses, are spending a lot of time around patients that are, and they're gathering information from these patients that maybe the patient didn't have time to communicate in the same amount of detail to the physician or to whoever they were seeing in the office. And so really using that information and sending referrals to dietitians, if you do have a dietitian at your facility, sending referrals to dietitians early on in the process. We know that malnutrition is a very significant problem among individuals going through cancer treatments. And it's much easier to prevent malnutrition than it is to treat malnutrition. So patients present, you know, with nutritional deficits oftentimes upfront. And if they're mild or moderate deficits, then a lot of times we can reverse those and the impact that they have on a patient's nutritional outcomes. But when we don't see a new patient until they have a severe nutritional deficit or until they're already malnourished, we have a much harder time in reversing those. We can sustain a patient overall, but it's something that it's much easier to prevent it from getting that bad up front. So referrals initially are much easier to manage with a patient's nutritional care than referrals late in the game. So using the dietitian as an advocate, as an important part of the care team, is really helpful as it relates to patient outcomes and just patient quality of life overall. Another way is that a lot of centers will have a validated screening tool in place, or if they don't, that's oftentimes something that we're working for from a nutritional standpoint to help with identifying patients that maybe don't present with a high-risk nutritional diagnosis or maybe don't present on a typically impactful from a nutritional standpoint treatment regimen. But maybe it's just that based on either comorbidities or other factors in their life that they have challenges with nutrition. And a lot of times we can pick those up on a nutrition screening tool up front. So that's something that if you do have a nutrition screening tool in place at your facility, just encouraging you to utilize it so that we are identifying these patients that have nutrition risk upfront and early on in their treatment. And if you don't, looking into different screening tools or how you can partner with dietitians at your facility to help with identifying those patients upfront and really having a positive impact overall on patient care and patient outcomes.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.